What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome to another edition of Meet Me at Musial, your last Musial for May. I'm your host, Daniel Shopton, C70 at the bat. With me is, at C70 on Twitter, with me, Alan Medlock, the Redbird Daily, A Medlock 1 on Twitter. We're recording this right after the Cardinals have dropped the opener to the Pirates, 8-1. So as excited as we probably were about this team last week when they put up 12 runs and were kind of on a bit of a run and even splitting the games with the Phillies something, they win a game against the Royals on Monday night where Miles Mikolas just looks great and haven't done a thing since. Two losses to the Royals and a loss here to Pittsburgh. And Alan, as we were talking a little before the show, there were some issues with the bullpen tonight. There were issues. There have been issues with the bullpens overall. But it's really boiling down to they just aren't putting runs on the board. It's difficult to win games. Even as great as the starting pitching has been, it's difficult to win games when you score, one run, two more runs, and then one run. It's not good.
No. It's frustrating. It's just like you and I talked about beforehand and a little show prep and then our text messages throughout the week. It's tough to get mad at them. This week has been very frustrating and easy to get mad at them when they're not scoring runs or when they lose because they're not scoring runs. You know, about a week ago before the start of the weekend series last week when they actually played pretty well, you couldn't get mad at them for anything they were doing because the offensive was just terrible. And then they start hitting, they start scoring some runs, and then it gets back to it to where the losses are a little more frustrating again. But like tonight, I had a bad feeling about tonight unless Gant really performed well, which I think he did. Now, I'm also a big Gant fan, so I was glad to see him do that. But, I mean, you have two leadoff doubles, move both guys over, and you can't score. I mean, those are things you just can't do. I mean, Wong drives a run in there. Pop fly scores Fowler. You never know what happens in this game. You know, it's one of those. It's, maybe things don't fall apart. Gant had to be perfect and wasn't and pitched well enough to where I think he needs to be in consideration for a role on this team of some fashion. I think that he'd be a great bullpen piece for him, but they're not doing anybody any favors right now. And until one of the big three being Fowler, Carpenter, Ozuna hit, it's going to be ugly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, as we were saying. You can't just stick Tommy Pham at the top of the lineup and then, have a bit of a resurgent Carpenter. He's kind of tailed off a little bit over the last couple of days, but still looks a whole lot better than the Carpenter that we saw earlier in the year. Even with them 1-2, there's nobody there to finish it up. Ozuna's not hitting like we thought he would when he came in, when he was traded for. We would have expected more like 10 homers right now instead of 3, and his overall line just isn't what you would want. You do have Dexter Fowler hitting in the 150 range. You have Colton Wong hitting on the 175 range. Ozuna did have 2 hits tonight, but neither one of them were potent ones. I guess he did have a double. I missed that. My feed went out, but I know the first one was kind of a flare bloop type thing that he beat out, which was fine. You got to take those, but I don't know. And then, you know, no Molina, no Paul DeJong, who broke his hand last week, and we could talk some about that. And as much as Francisco Pena has actually done a little bit more than we expected, with Molina and Carson Kelly out, it's still not enough. Jose Martinez has hit some here and there, but he seems to kind of go in spurts. There's just no consistency with this team, and like you said, that's just one of those things. You can get a runner on and get a runner in scoring position, but you can't. You've used your one hit up for the inning, it feels like.
Well, and Brad Thompson was talking about that tonight. He said this team just has the hardest time of putting things together. He said you'll have a big hit every now and then. He goes, but you never see a string of hits, and you never see really a string of games where they're doing that. He said until that comes around, he's super optimistic anyway, but he feels like the bats will come around, and I do too for the most part. But you get to May, you get to Memorial Day, and you pretty much that's the team that you've been dealt. You know, now how you improve from there. That's where you kind of start your improvement. You know, I'm on record of here saying that I don't really worry about the standings until around Flag Day, until around the middle of June. And then you kind of start figuring some things out, because then you're a month and a half away from the deadline. You can start figuring out what team you have. The injuries are frustrating, and I get it, but, you know, the offense has been pretty futile from the beginning of the season. So I like how they're pushing buttons. I have a feeling that this isn't the team that they're going to end up with. I still keep thinking that they're kicking the tires on the shortstop somewhere. Whatever happens, whether they go get somebody or whatnot, some of the guys have to hit. I mean, it's just bottom line, or this is not a playoff team like we thought it was going to be. They're just not a contender with the offense they have now.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine that they're sitting, six games over 500 right now, and still only, you know, 3.5-4 games out of the division lead. Nobody, you know, it's been a good division. Of course, everybody gets to beat up on the Reds, so that helps. But they're still in this thing. And, you know, like you said, if they can figure out a way to get this offense to click, you know, we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but the starting rotation is, you know, mind-boggling, at least on paper and at least in theory, at least, you know, in another week or two when Alex Reyes is in the rotation and Carlos Martinez is there as well, and you start figuring out how that all works. But, you know, those are guys, starters, that can go out there and you can legitimately expect them to hold the other team to two runs or less every night. What happens after that, whether the Cardinals have gotten a lead or if the bullpen has to hold something or whatever, that's a different story. But if you can get your starting pitchers to give you two runs a night, you should win, you know, 90% of those games. And right now, you know, you and I were talking about it, unless they score early and get a lead, it's very difficult for us to believe that they're going to put up enough to, you know, to rally, or, you know, a game today, it went 0-0 into like the 6th or 7th. The Cardinals just couldn't get anything going even when they had opportunities. And I don't, you know, like I said, I didn't watch a lot of it because of weather in the area, but it didn't feel like Pittsburgh just had a ton of chances either. I mean, John Gant did a real good job of limiting the opportunities until late in the game. It's just, he didn't get any support.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine.
Well, and that's, it's one of those things where this is kind of my safety net to fall back on, but I've always said, and everybody's always said, when you pitch, you'll win. You'll stay in it. And, Mo reiterated that last year when we were at the ballpark. He goes, the way that we feel that if you're starting pitching, is performing, you're going to stay in the race. And I feel like they'll stay in the race just pitching-wise. And they're not going to be as bad as they are right now offensively. But they've got to find something. Because just like you talked about, they may get buried. And the climb may get too steep for them. So they've got to start figuring something out to push some runs across. And, you know, hopefully it starts tomorrow. I know that I don't... I know that we planned on talking to Reyes, speaking about Reyes, and he's been, you know, just pretty much dominant in all his starts coming up. But I also think he's going to be that shot in the arm, and not necessarily performance-wise, but just a change in pace of having the prospect come through the doors and take the ball for you. I think that'll help him. I have a good feeling about the Milwaukee series. I just don't have a good feeling about the Pittsburgh series.
That may be true, although you think they would have gotten, and it's, I guess, a different type of story. But, you know, they've had that kind of spark with Jordan Hicks this year, you know, being the flamethrower, the guy that's throwing 105 miles per hour. And I know, again, it's different than a starter that could be one of the, I mean, if he pitches like he pitched in Memphis, he'll win the Cy Young, and he hasn't pitched for 2 months, you know. Or pitched in his entire rehab start, but
the Hicks situation is odd to me because he was kind of a come out of nowhere story.
Mm-hmm.
Reyes is one of those you counted on last year, and you've been counting the days for him to come back.
And that's true,
you know. And I think that there's a definite feel when you have a guy that's going to be a legit star walk through the clubhouse doors and take the ball for you, you know. And I think that also plays into the monotony of the season right now. You know, that you're always looking for that extra spark, that extra get up. And I think that he'll be that kind of a plug, spark plug for him. Now, whether that lasts, cause they're right now, they're so monotone as a team and have been for the past two and a half, maybe three and a half years at this point, that, there's no sustainability. So I feel like they've got to build on momentum that you can kind of see coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, you know, you look at this team, it should be more personable than it, I guess it is. I mean, Ozuna's got a good personality. Fowler was signed for his personality. Carlos Martinez obviously has personality. And some of the other guys, even that we may discount a bit, I think still have some too. You look at Adam Wainwright and the like. But you're right, it doesn't seem to have caught fire yet. So I don't know. We'll see how Reyes is. You know, there is this idea, at least for some, that I don't remember where I read it. It was some ball player, so that had this idea that, you know, they always scored a lot of runs for like their ace because they didn't feel the pressure to score runs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Cardinals are going to have basically, at least right now, a rotation of aces to some degree. So you'd like to think that puts a little less pressure on the offense to go out and score. I mean, if you can get one or two runs, you don't have to go out and put 10 runs up on the board. You're not, you know, as much as John Gant has pitched well, you know, you got to figure he's the kind of guy that might need 3 or 4 runs. And you don't have to worry, you know, Alex Reyes and all them, you probably don't have to worry about it like that. So maybe he gets a shot that way. Maybe people relax because they're like, hey man, we can put one run up and they're good. And then they wind up putting up 6 or 7 or whatever. I don't know. I don't know if it'll happen that way. You can only hope. You'd like to think, hey, it can't get any worse, but it probably could. So I don't know. And I think the key, like you said, getting Dexter Fowler going, because it's so hard to think that they're going to bench Dexter Fowler for extended periods of time. I mean, he's got a big contract. He's got a lot of potential. He was like, even what was it last year? He had like 18 homers or something. I mean, even after a slow start, that wasn't quite this slow, but it was still pretty close. Fowler, but I don't know that there's anything that indicates that Fowler's, you know, like we were talking with Carpenter earlier in the year. Carpenter had all these other things that seemed to indicate his approach was good, or at least pretty close to it. I don't know if there's ever Fowler. But it's hard to imagine that Fowler's just done, right? I mean, he was still pretty good last year. He still, you know, has 3-something years on this contract. You better hope he's not. Is he going to be able to turn it around, or are they going to wind up playing O'Neill and Bader enough and try to get the offense that way?
Yeah, it's a scary thought. I felt like he hit two balls. He squared two balls up today. You know, one on his double, then one that the liner to center. You can only hope. I mean, what quote did I read from Fowler this week that I thought was pretty interesting? And it was, it was the typical, you know, the typical line that everybody, that you always hear in a slump, that, you know, whenever he steps in the box, he's thinking about everything but hitting. You know, everything about except doing the right thing. He goes, there's so many voices in his head right now that's just kind of how it goes. So I don't know. He could just be saying those things. It seems like he's taking the field with him a little bit too. You have to push the right buttons, and that's where they've kind of dug themselves into a hole in the fact that some of these guys have got to get work and have to get at bats to get out of it. But to win games, it may not be the best option for them to do so. And we kind of had the similar conversation last week about certain situations like that on the pitcher side, that they need innings, but they've got to win some of these games. So it, I don't know. I don't know the answer. Where Ozuna is such the focal point of the offense to me is the fact that even last year's numbers for Carpenter and last year's number for Fowler still didn't get you in the playoffs. I mean, you've got to get something out of Ozuna. And that's negating Tommy Pham. Let's just assume he's going to be what Tommy Pham is. They've got to find offense from somewhere, somebody else. So two of those three have got to hit. And I feel like Ozuna and Carp are some of those guys that could carry you for 3 weeks. I don't know if Fowler can. I think for you, and I really like Fowler. That sounds bad, but the hitting pedigree of the other two seems to me that they can be one of those guys that can pull a Pujols for a season. So, you know, Albert is one of those guys. We're spoiled because I felt like you could almost predict his home runs because he would always come through in those big spots. Now, you know, he's been gone for a long time now, but I'm just saying that's one of the last greats that were here, and even a Holiday situation where you could expect for him to get a big hit. I think you could probably, I was hoping you could do that with Ozuna. I know at one point you could somewhat do that with Carpenter. I think it needs to be somebody like that that's just going to carry him for, you know, 14 games. You know, 2 weeks of games of just clubbing and driving in runs and just always staying in on second and running up pitch counts and stuff like that. And I feel like it's got to be one of those two. But I feel like one of the three of Carp, Fowler, and Ozuna have got to hit soon and got to start stinging the ball.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting, you know, Zach Gifford had an article out earlier this week about Ozuna and trying to hit the ball. He needs to basically start hitting the ball in the air, which we all, I mean, Zach said it in a much better way, in a much more, you know, backed up and intelligent way you see it, but, you know, that's kind of the way everybody's kind of thinking, because he has hit a lot of ground balls, and, you know, Zach kind of looked at it, and he needs to get an uppercut back into swing. Well, it seemed like, you know, I wrote about it one time this week, one of those Royals games. He had a couple balls that just kind of flared in there, landed, you know, that no man's land between, you know, the second baseman going out and the infielder, you know, the center fielder or whatever coming in. But I felt like that was him trying to get that uppercut back, you know, and he just didn't have the timing on it, but, he was working on it. So, you know, if that's the case, and he, like I said, he got a couple hits tonight, you know, maybe we'll start to see something out of him, because he would be a guy that, yeah, has done it before. You get really hot and, you know, put up a lot of runs. And, you know, like I said, with somebody, most likely between Pham and Carpenter and Martinez, it's going to be on ahead of him. So, you know, if he can start hitting doubles and homers, you know, that'll help the offense quite a bit. But the question is, you know, can he do that? And hopefully he can. Now, I guess we probably ought to address the elephant in the room, if you will, when we're talking about Marcell Ozuna. Obviously, as everybody's listening to this knows, before Wednesday afternoon's game, you know, Ozuna was in the lineup, and then late last minute he was scratched. Never found out why until the end of the game, where it found out he overslept and somebody had to go get him. which is, of course, in the middle of a loss with an off day after it. Everybody talks about it, and probably way more than they should have. But, I don't know, like I said, it didn't bother me as much. I mean, it wasn't a good look. It wasn't something that needs to be done. And obviously, you know, they didn't let him play in that game, although they were going to look like he was going to pinch it at one point in time until the inning ended with him on deck. I'm sure he was fined a certain amount. Again, all of that, it's not what you want. It's not what you want to see, but it didn't work me up terribly much as it did some people. I know you felt a little bit more strongly about it than I did, so I'll let you talk about it if you want to.
Well, I thought it was funny that, you're not giving us enough credit. If you remember in the first inning, you and I were going back and forth on our direct messages, and I said, if he's not there for the reason that I'm suspecting, I'm not going to be very happy about that. And you immediately came back and you go, well, it is a day game. He may have overslept. And that was in the first inning, and that was before news broke. I had a bad feeling about it, especially in the way that it was done, because I was like, well, if you're not getting any word, that's going to be a situation of a personal issue or he just didn't show up. Mm-hmm. And so I got myself worked up right around then thinking, well, you know, the situation that was obviously going to play out. As a professional athlete, you're held to a higher standard. And I know that some people do not want to hear this, and I just don't care. Yet, as a human being, your responsibility is to show up and to be there. I am not lenient at all about that. That's the one thing you have control of is when you can be there. I understand there's sickness happens. I understand accidents happen. Things happen. I would be willing to brush this one under the rug a little bit of, hey, people do this, and that's the main defense that people have been saying on the timeline is, yeah, I got this several times. Well, don't tell me you've never slept in. Everyone slept in. That's, you know, we're stupid. People do that. Adults generally do not do that. People making $9 million generally do not do that when one of the deals is to show up for a nationally televised event. I don't care. That's just how I feel about it. It's very unprofessional look to do it. The thing that I fall back on more than anything, and I was willing to let it go, except this is not the first time for him. And the minute that it came out, Craig Mish made a comment. He said, I remember this happening back in 2015, around the time they were threatening to send him down. Well, Joe Fusaro responded to that. He said, yeah, but didn't he take off after that? Well, it's interesting that he took off, but more interesting to me was this was the second time that it had happened, and he used the same excuses. Definitely not a good look. More or less, it'll be forgotten by the end of the weekend. It'll definitely be forgotten if he goes on a tear. But to me, the goodwill has really run its course on this one, and it's time to put up or shut up.
And that's fair. Of course, the issues in Miami were, I mean, he did not have a real great relationship with the front office anyway, because they were sending him down to the minors just to mess with the service time and things like that. I don't know if that had anything to do with it or not. And it may be just, I mean, he's just a heavy sleeper. I mean, we don't know. I think somebody did say that, saw somebody talk about, you know, he had multiple alarms that he just went through them. I don't know, especially when you live alone, which I assume he does, I don't know how much you can do, but, you know, like you said, it didn't bother me, but I do think that, you know, for as much as we talk about, yes, everybody has done something of that nature, you know, we've gone 8 years without a player doing this. Felipe Lopez did it in 2010, as an article mentioned it. You know, I imagine, you know, if this happens once or twice a year in MLB, it's kind of surprising. I know we don't necessarily hear from other teams and everything, but just the sheer number of times it doesn't happen, I don't know. I mean, it shouldn't happen. Let's put it that way. And that's what it has. And again, this is a team, because of Darryl Kyle, that typically is more sensitive to that. Now, I don't know that I heard anybody talk about there was a worry about Ozuna's health or anything of that nature, which is what they did. I do remember when Felipe Lopez was late in 2010, people were flipping out. I'm talking about people in the dugout and stuff like that. They were really concerned because a lot of them that were there had lived through the Darryl Call situation, and they knew this. There's nobody left on that team that played with Darryl Call. I mean, obviously Mike Matheny is there as the manager. And some of the coaching staff has got relationships that can remember that time, but there's no players left in the dugout that remember that. So that may have played a little bit of part of that. It's not as immediate for them as it was for people like Pujols and others that were still in St. Louis, and still vividly remembered, what happened with Darryl Kyle. So I always thought it was kind of interesting that that was not an aspect of this, but you know, you wonder if that's not, I guess you might think that that's part of the culture of the St. Louis area. It's just, that's embedded when the new guy comes over. It's like, you know, look, you know, don't be like, and maybe it's just one of those things you don't think about. I mean, it's like, shouldn't have to tell somebody don't oversleep, but you know, keeping that history alive to some degree of, you know, this is why it is so important to, you know, if something happens, call, you know, or, you know, try to make contact or things like that nature. So, you know, my feeling is, you know, Ben Fredrickson wrote an article about, you know, about Ozuna and about the Honey Maneuver, and a lot of people, some people liked it, a lot of people didn't. My feeling is, if this was, this is what turned you off from Marcell Ozuna, then you're a rare one, because either you've already been turned off by the fact that he's only hitting 3 home runs this season, or you're perfectly still fine with him. I don't see this being some sort of tipping point for most people. I mean, maybe a couple that were already, about to jump off the bandwagon and just finally did. But, and like I said, if he was hitting 12 home runs and hitting 300, you know, it's Ozuna being Ozuna, and it's kind of laughed off a little bit. You know, when he's struggling like the rest of the team is struggling, then it's a lack of preparation and a lack of being serious.
Yeah, that's the thing is, I've come off as hard on that, but I'm hard on anybody that's late, including my own family, you know, and stuff like that. That's the one rule that I just can't stand being broken. You know what I mean? You've made a commitment, be there. You know what I mean? That's your one responsibility. That's what you have control over, be there. The thing is I really like Ozuna, and I've said this on the show a lot. It's a personal issue to me, but it's a forgotten deal at this point, honestly. He's a lot better left fielder than I think he's going to get credit for, especially after, I didn't think the play was so egregious tonight, but some did. You know, it's tough to get a really good, honest readout off of Twitter, you know, but obviously some people were upset. There's been some lapses in the field. I didn't think it was necessarily mental lapses. He misplayed a couple balls that were in front of him. Didn't put his body in it, went to the wall for triples, and I know he's misplayed a carom off a wall, which we've seen a lot of very good left fielders do that. Plays good defense in my eyes, runs the bases really hard. Two of the aspects that I really like. So I like him as a player. That's what makes me even more angry about the situation, is how much I like him. I'm like, you know what? These are the things that you do in a market like St. Louis to get people not to like you. That's what I was disappointed in him. So water under the bridge, but just know that it's a personal issue with me, tardiness and absenteeism, and that's probably why I stand my ground so hard on it.
Yeah, I mean, y'all should hear what Alan has to say to me when I'm running a little late. It's just not pleasant at all. I mean, just man, it's rough.
So the show was supposed to start at 7:45, so I could see Solo tonight, but I'll be waiting in the morning.
I mean, it was bad. I mean, he's just, you know. It's a good thing he can't throw stuff through the Skype connection, because it could be bad. So as bad as his offense is, and it's bad, we've kind of beaten that horse. We've gotten more hits on it than the offense has. You know, the bullpen has become a focal point as well. We saw last Saturday Greg Holland come in, blow a game, and we'll talk about Greg Holland specifically here in a little bit. We saw Bud Norris throw a good inning and then come back out for a second, blow the game against the Royals on Wednesday. You know, so a game tonight where Brett Cecil came in to face a bunch of lefties. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think he got one of them out. And the game went from, what, 1-0, 2-0 to, you know, 4-5-0 real quick. There are still good arms down there. And I don't really want to necessarily lump, you know, Norris into a whole lot of this because he has been good. I mean, everybody has a glitch. Everybody has a bad game, so it's hard to.
Especially the two inning saves. But I'm getting you off tap.
It is hard to. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you kind of. And I guess Greg Holland is the real focal point. As I heard, I think Bernie Mikolas was talking about on his podcast with Will Leach. You know, not only has Holland been bad, but then Holland forces, it has repercussions throughout the rest of the bullpen. You know, Bud Norris does have to come in for a 4 or 5 inning, a 4 or 5 out save, or you have to use Hicks 2 or 3 days in a row, or you have to do, you know, have to use Tui Lavalla in a spot where you don't want to because you can't trust Greg Holland to come into that spot. You know, things like that. And, you know, Tui's been pretty good. I don't want to blame that. I'm just saying that general idea is you can't play your bullpen the way you want to because Greg Holland right now, it really shouldn't be into any game that's 2 or 3 runs separating them. I didn't have as much trouble with him coming into that game against the Royals on Tuesday night because they were down 3-1. The bottom of the lineup was coming up against the Royals closer. Odds were not real great there for the Cardinals. I mean, yes, you'd rather be just, you know, a bloop and a blast ties it up, and you'd rather be within 2 than 4 is what it turned out to be. But, you know, if you're going to put him into some sort of situation and see if he can get out of it, that's not the worst situation. It's what much worse when you're up 3-1 to bring him in. I don't know. I just don't know what to do with Greg Holland. I mean, we see it again tonight, you know. Maybe some bad luck involved as well, but, you know, he got all 3 outs this time. It's the first time he's completed an inning in like 3 or 4 outings. But he's given up 2 runs, I think, in the last 4 outings that he's been out there. And that's just, you can't do that. I mean, his ERA is, you know, 9.5 right now after tonight's game. The no spring training excuse doesn't fly anymore. And I know there are people that think he's going to get this back, and they very well may, but I don't see how the Cardinals can give him enough opportunities to actually try to get back unless he just wakes up one day and all of a sudden is throwing 94 and movement and, you know, all this stuff that gets him saves. I don't see how this works out.
Yeah, it's like you and I were talking after the Kansas City game. It's gone from boy, this makes me mad when he comes in to where I generally feel bad for him. Mm-hmm. So you know, yeah, I don't know. It's really not. I've used the term frustrating way too much tonight. But if Lyons comes back tomorrow and pitches well, you go Norris, you go Lyons, you go Hicks, you go, you know, Brebbia kind of got knocked around a little bit tonight, which kind of worries you, but you have the pieces to get guys out in games, so you don't know where a Holland does fit in. You know, it is very tough to be optimistic about the situation, and then it makes you really curious to see how it's going to play out, because the front office has some has, you know, patience is definitely one of their strengths. So I would like to see how this plays out. I'm really curious to see how it does. And after you see, you know, Hanley get released today, teams do it. You know, Boston's eating a lot of money on guys that, you know, between Castillo, Sandoval, and Hanley Ramirez, that It's a lot of money you got to be willing to eat. And I understand it's Boston, but teams do cut their losses on some of these guys. So I really wonder, like tonight, after the Kansas City game, I thought, you know, things could be coming to an end. After tonight, when he can't get anybody out, I don't know how many more appearances he's bought himself.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you look at this. I mean, it was a little bit frustrating because he did have a stretch where he was pitching pretty well, you know, beginning of the month. He threw 4 innings out of those outings. You know, he's still walking too many guys. He walked 3 in those 4 outings, but, you know, they were scoreless. They were, you know, all right. They weren't great. But you kind of started to feel like maybe he was kind of turning the corner. But like I said, the last 4 outings, the 16th, and I mean, they're spaced out. It's not like they're basically every 3 days he's getting out there. It's not like he's going back-to-back days or anything like that. You know, 2 runs, 1 out, 2 runs, 2 outs, 2 runs, no outs, and then tonight, 2 runs, 3 outs. I mean, 8 earned runs in 2 innings over that span. You can't do that. You can't. You're right. Teams do waive players, and Holland does have the advantage of being just a 1-year rental. A guy that you know, probably hoped would pitch well enough that you could talk to about an extension or at least get a, you know, maybe a draft pick or whatever out of it. And that's not happening. I mean, it's hard to imagine that happening. Let's put it that way. After the first 2 months that he's been in this team. You know, maybe they can talk him into a minor league rehab type of stint. Maybe they can find something that looks kind of weird on an MRI and disable him. But without either one of those, when you do have, you know, a starting staff, assuming nobody goes down, out of the 6, you know, when Martinez gets healthy and Reyes is here, you've got that rotation that you know, 6 people in the rotation. And then, you know, John Gant, again, has pitched well enough, and he's a guy that can come in and be a 1-inning, 2-inning reliever, which can be good. I mean, there's 7 guys right there, and some of the others, you start to, you know, it starts to be kind of a press to keep Greg Holland when he's not doing well. So maybe they will. I mean, you get to that mid-June like we did last year when the Chris Maloney took the blame for a terrible team, basically, what it boiled down to. Maybe that, you know, and they released Johnny Peralta then. You know, maybe they will. Maybe they'll eat that money and let it go. Makes it frustrating to lose that draft pick for, you know, 2 months of bad pitching, but c'est la vie. I mean, this stuff's gone. You can't get it back no matter. So, they might. I don't know. I think that they feel bad for him as well.
Yeah. Which makes me think the Phantom DL is not out of the question. I kind of thought it would happen that next day after the Kansas City outing. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I had talked about that, and I was like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if something maybe happened along those lines, you know, today. And it was actually one of those games, which was the day game, was one of the very few days this month where they haven't made a transaction.
Yeah.
You know, it's really surprising. So, yeah, tough times. And you wonder, I hate it for guys like Myers, who's pitched well enough to where he should be getting some of these looks. Mm-hmm. And Tui Valala is pitched well enough to where he should be getting some of these looks in tight games. And they're going to have to keep running out Holland to get him to get him ready. I feel like Gant would be a benefit in the bullpen. But once again, he's going to be blocked, and it's going to be a numbers game. Maybe they want to keep him extended in Memphis as well, but you would think that they have enough guys in Memphis ready to go that, you know, they could utilize one of them in the pen. So I don't know. I mean, we do have a long way to go. We're not even to the first third of the season, but the trends are not pretty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boy, I do. You're right. I think, and they're using Tui a little bit more. although the fact that they used him for just one third of an inning, you know, against the Royals,
yeah.
On, what was that? That was on Wednesday. The one time that Mike Matheny doesn't do a double switch, you know, it's kind of frustrating. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, could have helped if he had been able to go the next inning and push that back. Maybe Norris doesn't have to go to, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah, he and Myers. Brebbia is a concern. I think you start looking at him and, you know, in May, he's got a 7.20 ERA. He's pitched 10 innings. He's given up 8 runs. That is not good, especially when 2 of them are homers. Now, you know, he's still striking out a decent amount, and his walk rate's low, but he's just getting hit. And that's kind of what we've talked about. I think we talked about it last year, or definitely in the offseason, where we felt that Brebbia was going to – he kind of overachieved last year, that he was going to not, you know, kind of come back to the pack. And I know he had a pretty strong, decent spring, if I remember right. Because he was about to make the team before the Hicks and Holland stuff. But, and Myers kind of beat him out pitching wise. He's a guy, I think he's going to wind up back in Memphis, and he may just kind of be going back and forth, but I don't know that he's going to lock down a spot in this bullpen, as a reliable guy. Without showing a little bit more in Memphis, because he's been scored on in almost all but 2 of his outings in May, and that's tough.
Yeah, it's that carousel is just going to keep spinning. You know, that's they just have too much pitching talent to have these kind of problems.
They do. As you mentioned, I'm a little bit surprised that they didn't make a move today. To bring in the patron pitcher, Tyler Lyons, who was supposed to, for all that I realized, originally was going to be activated for today, and now he was not.
To me, it's frustrating because I think that means that it's going to be for Gant.
Yeah, that's kind of what I just pulled up here from RotoWire, that the idea was that it would be a procedural move so they could send Gant down and activate Lyons, which, that's frustrating. You know, maybe, and again, I don't know that we've seen the end of Gant because Brebbia is going to have to go down, but it's, you know, this next week, I mean, when Alex Reyes comes off the 60, somebody's got to come off the 40, which is probably going to be Steve Barron. But then somebody else has to, you know, and I guess, you know, he's probably already have gone down because Carson Kelly will have been back by then. So somebody else has
to go down. I'm assuming, will Lyons and Kelly not be back tomorrow?
I assume both of them will, yeah.
Okay, because Kelly's due tomorrow, right? I think he can come off tomorrow.
I think so, and from all indications, he is going to be back. So,
well, Pena could use a day off, too. He's gotten beat up the last 3 out of the last 4 games.
Yeah, catching Jordan Hicks is a problem for any catcher, apparently. Kind of lucky to have avoided major issues there. Yeah, you figure Lyons and Kelly are activated. Gant and Barron go down. That probably takes care of that situation. But then when, you know, on Tuesday when Alex Reyes is ready to come back, you know, they probably, you know, like I said, they wave Barron off the 40 man. He'll pass through waivers, go back to Memphis, then whatever. It is disappointing, as was pointed out. He only needs like another few, like less than a week, I think, to get his pension. So hopefully at some point in time he can make it back. But, you know, with that 40 man, it's tough to know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and then, you know, Reyes comes back. Maybe that's when they send Brebbia down. I don't know. There's a lot of tough parts in there. There's also the possibility that they send Dominic Leone to the 60-day because, as far as I know, they still haven't figured out that nerve issue.
Yeah, that's kind of the move that I thought. When we talked about it last week, that's what I thought would happen. Would make that and then make that be an easy switch, and then you don't have a lot of 40-man roster implications on that. But with Lyons coming back, with Kelly coming back, you know, and with Reyes coming back, there's going to have to be some churn. So
yeah, and
I'm kind of glad to see some of those guys coming back. I know I can be a little too rah-rah on some of the guys that come back, but Lyons can be a weapon if he's right. You know, I have a lot more faith in him than Cecil, and I know that was something we were going to cover. And I can't believe I'm saying that because I really felt like Cecil had kind of turned the corner a little bit, but. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk a little bit about Brett Cecil, because, again, I was like you. I kind of thought, you know, but in last year, Brett Cecil, he was not great, but it was kind of, he'd be bad, and then he'd be really good, and then he'd be bad again, and then he'd be really good. He kind of went back and forth, and we thought we'd see a little bit more consistency out of him this year. But you look at tonight, and he comes in the bottom of the sixth?
Yeah.
And faces, I don't remember, there was a stretch of lefties. I don't remember how many. Three, four, five, maybe. And didn't get them out. And the Cardinals have wanted him to be this lefty reliever, this lefty specialist, the loogie guy that goes in there and, you know, he can be the guy that gets all the tough left-handers out. And yet, it just doesn't feel like he's been able to do that. And you look at it this year, he's only faced four righties and gotten, well, he's walked two of them and got the other two out. Lefties are hitting, you know, 250 against him. That's before tonight. It just doesn't seem like he's... I guess that's not too bad, but even last year, he struggled to get the lefties out. He had a better chance with the righties. I was a little disappointed that Matheny, you know, pulled him when the righties came up, because it was like, well, he hadn't been getting lefties out. Let him try to get those guys out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, and he's another one. I mean, two more years on this deal, it's got to... They need to get something out of it, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always optimistic because when he looks good, he looks really good. And, you know, here you hear about his curveball, and that's what got him paid. And it came back, and they said it was back to being devastating. But then everything tonight, all balls were hit hard. You know, it's and it was funny because the Josh Bell sack fly to put it 3-0 was a fastball, and we're lucky that it stayed in the park. Obviously, it didn't matter because all those guys scored anyway. But yeah, I mean, it was it's frustrating. I don't know what to say about that. It just seems like there's options that would help. And that all the pressure wouldn't be on these guys to be perfect in every situation. Because I think that's what we're expecting out of the guys. Because those same buttons are being pushed, which I don't necessarily think they all have to be. You know, you and I off the top of our head named three or four relievers that we think could benefit the team right now. And that's just guys that are up, really. Right. You know, and not necessarily any of that way that's in Memphis. So yeah, it's a weird time right now. A loss like tonight is kind of you feel like you've hit rock bottom. But it wouldn't have been so bad tonight if you wouldn't have lost the two against Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you came in, went into a three, tonight wouldn't be so bad because then you turn around and say, well, let's win the series and play well, pitch well the next two games. You've got Flaherty, who's looked great, and you got Michaelis, who's looked great. So you have a pretty good chance you'd fill in those two games, but now it feels like every game's a must win, and I hate that it's gotten to that point before we reach June.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. If you lose a game like tonight after winning 2 out of 3 to Kansas City, you get frustrated, but it's like, okay, you go out, you try to win the next one. You've got, like I say, you've got the good pitchers going. You've got some good pitchers going with Flaherty and Michaelis, so you got to feel well. You know, you feel like you got the edge in the pitching matchups over the next 2 days, and if the offense can come around and get you a few runs, then you're good. But losing to Kansas City, and then you lose this one, that's 3 in a row, and the same type of game. Yeah, it just builds up the frustration. You had an off day in there to let it build up some more, and we need to see the Cardinals win. 7 of 9, you know,
yeah.
11 of 15, something like that. And they haven't done that much. I mean, you know, they won, did they win 5 in a row when they swept the Reds? And I think they may have won 4 or 5 in a row, or, you know, 5 or 6 of something somewhere along the way. But it's a lot more of win a couple, lose one, win one, lose a couple more, you know. For the fact that this team is what, 6 games over 500, it still feels like they play 500 baseball. In fact, if it wasn't for the Reds, it's, you know, the 7 wins against the Reds, they wouldn't be. So it's just, it's hard to feel like this team's going to kind of coalesce. There's so much there, but trying to imagine that it actually all works, it's just, I don't know, it feels very difficult for me to believe that this team is a playoff team when they can't, you know, all that talent is there, but it's not meshing for whatever reason. I don't know, you know, we talked about my John Mabry being an issue last week, I think, and yes, of course, there's a couple articles out this week about John Mabry, so about how hard he works and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know if that's a preemptive strike to make sure that, you know, that everybody's getting frustrated. So let's try to make sure that they, you know, know how much he's doing. But I don't, I mean, as much as I wonder, given some of the situations and some of the things that we've seen over the last few years, I don't know that my, you know, switching John Mabry with an alive Ted Williams or whatever would make that much difference. You know, it might help some, maybe it wouldn't, maybe it wouldn't, I don't know. I just, it's very difficult to start looking at this team and saying, because that's what we do, is we look at it and say, if Fowler gets going, and if Ozuna gets going, and if, you know, they make a deal, or if Paul DeJong comes back quickly, or, you know, all this kind of stuff. But that's just, you know, if it was just one if, you know, then like, okay, maybe that'll work. It's 3, 4, 5 ifs right now.
Sure.
And to get them all to line up, that's difficult.
Yeah, and it... And we're saying this about a team that we've had this same conversation for the second half of 15, all of 16, all of 17, and now for a good portion of the first half of 18. You know, it's, it just feels like it never, that they play well and they're a good team, but they've never taken the step, another step to being a playoff great team, safely into the playoffs, that team. And I'm not a Bethany hater by any stretch of the imagination, but you do wonder if there is any fire, you know, because it kind of seems like the same pattern. Mm-hmm. And I know we're only a third of the way into the season, and not even that yet. And I know it's kind of premature, and I know that they're above 500, which we both worried would never happen last year. Mm-hmm. And they're right there in a division that that you play, so guys that they have so many head-to-head games with all the teams still left, that they won't play this bad all year. We know that. But the pattern is it makes you nervous that they're going to have to do something, which I kind of answer my own question. I can't imagine it being the same this year. You know, last year we felt like it was one of those years where it's like, okay, this is who we are, we're going to roll with it. I just can't imagine that being the case this year. I don't know why. I do feel like that they'll tinker a little bit with the roster this year. And it may not be go to get a Machado, which I don't think that's going to happen anyway. But it may not be necessarily getting somebody like that. A Donaldson wouldn't necessarily surprise me. Somebody needs to come in and be the thorn in the side a little bit and kind of change the complexion and maybe just change the course. It just needs a little bit of a churn, and it needs a little bit of a new face somewhere. And that may even be from Memphis. I don't know. And it may even be Reyes. I'm hopeful that's the case. But it just seems like the same pattern we've had for almost 3 seasons now, and it just doesn't seem to change.
Yeah, and I mean, even that, I mean, you think about last year, Tommy Pham came into this clubhouse as that new face, as that guy that was going to ride people, as the guy that, you know, said what he thought and, you know, kind of made people uncomfortable at times. It still didn't work. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of wondering what it would take to get this. And maybe, you know, again, I don't see it happening, but maybe it does. I mean, if, for whatever, maybe it just takes somebody like Mike Matheny or somebody like John Mabry losing their job with it, you know, and players, will they respond to that? It's hard to know. You know, last year things happened, you know, Peralta was gone and Maloney left and they shuffled the things and then they went out and they were playing the Phillies who were not any good and they won. And then it never really took that. I mean, they didn't start winning until well after that. So you can't even say that that was the catalyst or anything. So I don't know. I don't know what it takes. Because this team is too good. I mean,
sure.
It's if you're playing a team that, you know, it's like Baltimore or something that just, you know, the talent wasn't necessarily there and everybody was bad and, you know, you didn't expect them to necessarily be good this year. Although I guess Baltimore was at least a fringy dark horse type thing. But, you know, that's one thing. But this was a team that, on paper, looked like a team that could at least be a wild card and possibly win the division, especially the way the Cubs have started. Should have been able to be a team that, you know, right now is, you know, at least contending right there with Brewers instead of being, you know, four games back or whatever. And I just don't know what it takes.
Sure. There's enough. To me, there's a lot of redundancy on the roster. Three or four guys for, you know, two spots. A lot of the same type players. Now you wonder if that's not going to change a little bit. If that may be one of those situations where you want to say, hey, you know, Jose Martinez, he's our first baseman. He's one of our better hitters. Well, the offense is terrible as is. You know, if you feel like you could upgrade somewhere, you know, move somebody.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and I'm not just putting the spotlight on him. I'm just saying that it's on anybody that, it just seems like there's a bunch of first base DH types and you got a second baseman who's not necessarily hitting and we keep trying to keep thinking he's going to get on track. But, you know, it just doesn't seem to happen. So I don't know. I mean, it's funny how in 15, this wouldn't have made us nervous. You know, three losses we'd have been mad, but it wouldn't have made us nervous. And, you know, 16, you knew the Cubs were good, but it still wasn't that bad. You still felt like you had a good team. Last year is felt lethargic all season, three in a row, made you feel like we feel tonight. And it's funny just how that changes after a few years of not making the playoffs. And unfortunately, that's a lot of the same roster. Mm-hmm. Some of the guys they did bring in to help a roster, which I felt like was good enough anyway, and Ozuna hadn't performed. I would like to see Ozuna go for a week straight of hitting line drives to the right side of the field. Then I would feel like he's coming out of it a little bit. You know, he did have two hits tonight. One was a hustle double, and it was impressive. You know, so it got by the first baseman, and he ran it out on a good right fielder in Polanco. Maybe that's kind of the spark. But it always seems like we're looking for that kind of a spark when we really just need to see some consistency out of these guys, and then it'll start coming together.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, because if you could just, consistency would be really big.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we spent a lot of time not being real happy, so let's end the show on a high note, and let's talk about Alex Reyes. finishes his rehab last night in Memphis. Just goes nuts. Seven innings, one hit, 13 strikeouts. He wound up striking out nine in a row at one point, which is a Pacific Coast League record, and I think the Pacific Coast League has been around for like 100-something years. So, it's a heck of a thing. I mean, he threw, 44 innings, I think, in rehab? No, he had 44 strikeouts. He threw 24 innings in rehab. Over the four, you know, he walked it up the ladder. He started at, you know, single A, went to the high A, double A, triple A, went right up the ladder, and nothing stopped him. No runs, 44 strikeouts, seven walks. He just was basically as dominant as, I mean, we've never seen Alex Reyes that dominant. I mean, we've heard about Alex Reyes, and that's the thing. I think that's the thing that's going to be interesting. because we've heard there's the legend of Alex Reyes, but when he came up in 16, for legitimate reasons, wasn't that pitcher. You know, he takes some adjustments, it takes some while. I mean, he showed flashes of it, but you know, he just, and he was sometimes in the reliever and sometimes he was a starter, and you know, he kind of bounced around, and he just wasn't quite as, you know, this world beater that we had kind of built him up to be. And that's fair. I'm not blaming him at all, because, you know, you shouldn't be. I mean, our expectations are ridiculously high on these people sometimes. But when you see him, you know, like this, you know, cyborg running through this gauntlet of minor league experiences and just not stopping at all and just crushing everything in its way, man, it's hard not to get really fired up about him being in the rotation.
Oh yeah, and I've tried to really, really keep my expectations at a minimum, and it's just almost impossible to do. Mm-hmm. After what he's done through the system, and it was I don't know. I'm last week we talked about him coming in and being that spark just to get a new face in there and to get the big prospect in. Well, now you're thinking he has a chance to come up and maybe not be as dominant as we've seen, but pretty darn good. So it's hard to kind of say, oh, let's just see what we get out of it. But I mean, I expect a whole lot right now.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if he comes up and gives up two runs in his first inning or something, we're all be like, what in the world's going on?
Here we go. Know? Yeah.
You know.
What'd Matheny do?
That's right. He's already been infected. Yeah, he should pitch Tuesday against the Brewers. Now, there's been a lot of talk about how this works, you know. Do they send Jack Flaherty down, or do they send Luke Weaver down, or whatever, you know. Right now, they don't have to do anything. They're sending John Gant down, but, you know, Carlos Martinez is not too far away. There's also been some talk about some sort of hybrid six-man that, you know, some of the guys stay on the five and some rotate. I have problems really believing that Mike Matheny is going to do that.
Yeah, I get the feeling that's not an option. Even last week, after we got off last week, I kind of thought, you know, we're really overreacting for something that's 2 weeks away, because unfortunately these things do seem to work themselves out. And I kind of feel, even with it being imminent within the next week, it still feels like we're kind of rushing the fact that we haven't seen Carlos do anything, you know, and then we heard a week or two. So, I don't know. We'll see how it plays out, and performance may be another tale. But I feel like everybody this time through the rotation is well enough to stay, you know, but it is a numbers game. So I'm not sure, and I probably won't start sweating that until we start getting some more tangible evidence that Martinez is close.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, but I think, you know, and obviously the front office is thinking this out. You know, they have to be talking about this week. You know, probably about one turn through the rotation before Martinez is ready to go, and that may tell us a little bit more. I mean, look, Weaver has looked very good, but if he has a bad outing, you know, maybe that's enough fair justification to send him down. If Jack Flaherty stumbles tomorrow against Pittsburgh, and then again against, well, Pittsburgh, because, you know, next weekend we're playing the Pirates again, although finally in Busch. You know, maybe that's enough to send him down. You know, I don't know that there's anything Michael Walker can do to be taken out of this rotation. You know, I don't know. You know, we'll see. But this is a dicey situation, and this may be, I mean, this may be the impetus to get Mo to make a deal. And I don't know who it is, because if you trade any of those guys in the rotation, it should be a big deal. I mean, you should be getting, I mean, I'm not saying they're going to one-on-one, but if you've got them included in a package it should be for somebody like Donaldson or Machado or something like that. You don't go out and get some rent-a-cop or type of thing. You know, a rental shortstop is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But, you know, some run-of-the-mill, hey, this guy's okay, he'll cover us for the rest of the year if we need it, or, you know, however long Paul DeJong's out. But you don't use a Luke Weaver to get a guy like that, you know. So if he's going to make a trade, it needs to be something big. And making a big trade in the beginning of June is not John Mozeliak's way of doing things, or Michael Gersh's way of doing things. They don't want to make a trade until, you know, well, it feels like August most of the time these days, but.
Yeah, well, and I don't even know if they feel, I feel like they would almost be giving up on one of the guys too soon. You know, Waka would be a different situation, but he's kind of like the calming force right now. So, I don't know. It is a, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. They've stockpiled so much that they are going to have to give up something. But, you know, the track record on young pitchers, guys get hurt. So,
yeah, they do. They do. And you hate to think that because you – but, you know, you also have – you have John Gant who can fill in. You have you know, I don't know where, you know, Dakota Hudson is going to be, you know.
Gomber,
who might actually like to do something in the major leagues, except for sit around for 4 or 5 days. You know, there are, you know, you've got Helsley, who is pitching at Memphis at times, and while he feels like he might become a bullpen guy, he's still right now a starter. Dakota Hudson, others like that. I mean, you know, even if you trade a Luke Weaver or a Jack Flaherty or a Michael Walker or whatever it may be, even if somebody else then goes down, you still have arms to do this with, it feels like. So, I don't know. It's difficult to see the Cardinals parting with any of these guys. So, I don't know if they will, but just the idea that Alex Reyes is coming back, and it is coming back in a manner that we are still excited about. A guy that's coming back, you know, has this legend. I mean, if he had scuffled in the minor leagues, you know, I guess might have solved some of the problems. They just leave him down there for a little bit longer, but, you know, he still wouldn't have had this build up, but, you know, to have him just dominant like that and to think about that being at the major league level is so exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome to see a new face. It's awesome to see the, or to see a familiar face back. And, seeing like he's pitching like that number one prospect. You know, it's gonna be exciting.
Yep. Alright. Well, that's probably gonna do it for us this week. Like I said, it's the end of May. I hope everybody has a good Memorial Day weekend. Alan and I'll be back with you next weekend as the Cardinals take on the Pirates again. In the middle, they'll go up to Milwaukee and play the Brewers. This is a stretch that's kind of important to them, and they've not started it off well, so maybe that's the only loss that they'll have in this stretch, and they'll just go on this big run, and we'll always be happy, but I don't know that we're going to put any money down on that.
Yeah.
Anyway, and if you were, for some reason, wanting my review of Solo, I'm sorry, Alan hadn't seen it yet, so we'll talk about it maybe next week when he gets a chance to see it, so I don't want to get into anything while he still hasn't seen it, so, and if I can't imagine you really cared anyway, so, until next week, that is Alan. I am Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Suter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.